not to put any pressure on our next guest, who's himself written a lovely book. Brendan Madden joins us now. He's written a book called Once Upon a Time in La Liga, Spanish Football's Forgotten Tales. Good evening, Brendan.
Evening, gents. How you doing?
No pressure at all for the award-winning Andy Brassell.
Yeah, Andy will have to tell me how to get a Japanese publicist.
He brought a copy of the book actually to my wife, who collects books, and it's a beautiful thing because, of course, they open right to left rather than left to right, as ours do, and it's a beautiful thing. Brendan, huge subject, Spanish football's Forgotten Tales. There's a lot of coverage of football, and Spain is front and centre much of that. Why did you decide to write this book?
Yes, I'd sort of been experimenting really with writing for a little while. I used to be in sort of the analytics side of Spanish football for a while. And when I left that world, I wanted to keep the connection with Spanish football. So I started sort of writing. And obviously, if you're new to it, there's probably nothing more boring than me sort of banging on about, you know, Barcelona transfer targets, etc. Mm. So I kind of found a sort of little niche of these sort of untold sort of historic football, Spanish football stories, really. And they sort of seem to get a little bit of traction. People seem to like them. And I sort of loved sort of researching them, you know, digging around the archives and through newspapers and stuff. And got to a point where I sort of had enough of them where I thought it might make a sort of nice collection and a nice book.
Okay, and that's exactly what it's done. Let me ask you about, these are all, they're not obscure, these stories, but you say they're not marker headlines about Real. I'm talking to you, Brendan, from the Republic of Ireland. And so I was interested in Michael Robinson. People remember him as the Republic of Ireland centre forward. He also played for City and Brighton and Liverpool, of course. But after his playing days ended, he became a much bigger star in Spain than he'd ever been while being a professional footballer. He became a star media pundit. I know he passed away very much too young a few years ago, but he was an absolute superstar in Spanish football. How come?
Yeah, someone I got really fascinated with because I was lucky enough, we used to have the sort of, in my office I used to work in, we used to have the TV and stuff like that. And when I was learning Spanish, he was actually one of the first ones I could really understand because he was quite famous for speaking Spanish in a sort of quite an English accent. But yeah, it's always really hard to get across to people how massive he was there. I think the basic story is, yeah, he went to Osasuna at sort of end of his career when his knees were sort of on the verge of giving out. Became a real sort of cult hero in Osasuna. You know, he's a very brave number nine sort of centre forward. His knees gave away. He gave way while he was there. He actually had to sort of retire. He cancelled his contract, which he didn't want to take money that he couldn't play for, which made him very popular with the Osasuna fans. But he sort of worked his way into the media there and sort of became an absolutely huge star. Really, really huge. And the chapters are sort of a bit of a tribute to him, really, because he's always been a sort of hero of mine, and just also a way of just trying to get across how massive he was over there, how huge and how loved he was. I think there's one little vignette in there where I think it's an old story that Graeme Souless used to say that he was walking down the road with Michael Robinson and Seve Ballesteros after lunch one day, and everyone came up to Michael Robinson to get his autograph, and hardly anyone went to poor old Seve.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Brendan, it's beautifully written. It's beautifully told. I really enjoyed it. And I think that what people will feel when they're reading it is you can get really lost in some of these stories that are going to such depth and they're so lovingly recounted. And there's so many bits of detail, even if you're someone who knows Spanish football well, because not only does it go beyond Real Madrid and Barcelona and latterly Atletico, but it demolishes some cliches. The one I really liked actually was, I'll come to other ones that I like in a little bit, but the one I really liked is the story about Racing Santander and how they stood up against the Franco regime in the dying embers of that. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that's the sort of lead off chapter actually. Two incredible guys. So there's a winger from Valencia, from a Republican family in Valencia called Sergio Manzanera. He went to Racing in that summer of 1975 and he immediately struck up this friendship with a Basque number nine called Aitor Aguirre, obviously from a very sort of repressed sort of upbringing, shaken down by the police as a youngster, you know, all that sort of the classic sort of Franco repression tales of the Basque country. And we're in that actual 50th anniversary territory because it's 50th anniversary of Franco's death coming up. And it was in that last, those sort of dying embers, as you said, Andy, of the regime, where they became a lot more repressive and they started using the death penalty a lot more. And the last time the death penalty was used in Spain was September 1975, and five people were executed on a Saturday morning. And that sort of news troubled Aitor and Sergio quite a lot. And they went out the next day and they just done something very, very humble, very simple, tied sort of bootlaces around their arms in form of black armbands. But they played the first half. Sergio set up a goal for Aitor, and they kind of thought no one had really noticed, but they went in at half time to the change rooms and the tunnel was sort of stuffed with armed police. That had been very much noticed what they'd done. They got given an ultimatum to take them off then or be arrested. They decided to take them off. They thought they'd sort of made their point. They went out and won the game, but the next day they sort of had to go to court. They were fined. Their mail was tampered with. They had sort of death threats from extreme right-wing groups. And I think Aitor had to send his family back home to Bilbao, and Sergio, I think he said he sort of slept with a pistol under his pillow for the rest of the season. So amazing guys. I was lucky to sort of track them down and meet them both. And just like a lot of the stories in the book, it's kind of like just a massive pleasure to be able to sort of tell those stories to a new audience.
Absolutely fascinating. Thank you for that. In my opinion, Johan Cruyff, apart from being one of the best five players I ever saw, probably in the top three, I think he's the most important figure in football in the past three decades. It's his ideas, the Hungarian stroke Dutch ideas, through the prism of Johan Cruyff, become what we know at Barcelona, and all the rest of it. And yet there's a part of your book, and I'd completely forgotten. I thought I knew every single, if I could talk about Johan Cruyff on Mastermind, but he had that spell late in his career, a few games for Levante.
Yeah, in the second division, bizarrely. And this is before he went back to Ajax and won the title and obviously signed off with Feyenoord. But probably the weirdest 10 games of Cruyff's very, very famous career. Odd, and yeah, something that he often glosses over in his autobiography, there's exactly half a sentence devoted to his spell at Levante, but there's a lot more devoted to the reason why he ended up there, which was a disastrous pig farming investment.
So he had
a disastrous pig farming investment that he regrets getting involved in. When he left Barcelona, actually, there was a dispute where they wouldn't pay his tax bill. So he ended up looking for sort of quite novel ways to make money. And when he came back from America to Europe, he was eyeing up a few deals. But Levante sort of had this ambitious sort of, Paco Aznar was his name. He was a sort of ambitious go-getting president who had big dreams but not very great grip on sort of financial basics. But he came along at sort of the end of the season. He was meant to give them this brilliant push towards the end and push Levante up into Primera, and they'd already lined up these sort of tours of South America and North America and expansion of the fan base, etc. But it never really worked. He never quite clicked with his teammates, and it all sort of ended in ignominy, really. They failed to get promoted, and I think in Cruyff's last game, they sort of lost to a relegation-threatened team at home, and the fans were irate and ended up sort of chasing the president through some tennis courts. So it was a bit of a whimsical one. There's a lot of sort of weighty tales in there, but I quite like that one. It was there's a lot of sort of bizarre twists and turns in that bizarre
spot. And Brendan, I want to congratulate you on the book, but also on the fact that this program, which does tend to follow its own course, and individual highways and byways sometimes become small tributaries and little lanes, but never had I expected to hear the phrase "some disastrous pig farm investments" on the show. So congratulations again.
Thank you very much.
Brendan Madden there, whose book is called, I'll repeat it again, Once Upon a Time in La Liga, Spanish Football's Forgotten Tales. And it does, rather brilliantly, exactly what it says on the tin.